This is Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtish. I have in the studio with me Dr. Susan Zimmet. She's a candidate for the school board this fall. Susan, thanks so much for joining me.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
Why run for school board?
In 2002, I was chair of the District Accountability Committee, and then I became co-chair, and then I've stayed involved in a number of district committees, a GAP committee, and a year and a half ago, I rejoined the District Accountability Committee. After I put my name in for a school board candidate and was not chosen, but the DAC committee at the time felt they could use assistance. They asked me if I would help, and Jonathan Nickel, who also put his name in for the board a year and a half ago, and Barb Pitchford, who put her name in, they asked all of us to please help them, because they were having difficulty navigating all the requirements that the DAC puts forth by the state. In particular, the DAC has a rubric which requires us to gather and organize data, review current performance, describe significant trends, prioritize performance challenges, identify root causes. It's a quite involved rubric, and it was much, much more involved now than it had been 15 years ago when I was chair. So we all put our best thinking caps on, delved into the Colorado Department of Education data to compare all kinds of trends, spending trends, test score trends. And it was so eye-opening that many of us decided we should probably run for the school board because, again, we should try, because our trends were very disappointing, and we wanted to reverse the trends. Basically, we were concerned that our students were not growing a year's worth of academic performance, which is what not only No Child Left Behind required, but Every Student Succeeds Act required, and we just weren't doing it. We were falling short, despite lots of extra spending compared to other districts, and despite having spent heavily to achieve small class sizes. So we looked at all the trends. We were pretty alarmed, and a number of us chose to run for school board after serving on the DAC again for the last year and a half, for the sake of the students.
What kind of ratings were you looking at to come to these conclusions?
So over the last 7 years, from 2010 to 2017, our standardized test scores have declined steadily. And as many people in this community know, in 2012, we were considered number one in the state by U.S. News and World Report. Now, in 2017, we're not even in the top 49 districts, according to U.S. News and World Report. Our ACT scores as of this past year have qualified us as number 31 in the state by that metric. Our elementary school, unfortunately, for the first time since I've been aware, the preliminary report from the state is that we're going to require an improvement plan. Generally, we have only required performance plans, which is for above average districts. But when we fall below the 50th percentile as far as growth or academic achievement and some combination of that, then the state keeps a closer eye on us and really wants us to turn that around. It's not a turnaround plan. That would be if we were in the lowest quintile, but we are requiring an improvement plan at the elementary school. At the high school level, we have maintained good ratings overall, despite a decline in our standardized test scores and in our year's growth, because Kathy Klug's dynamic college program gives the district a lot of points, positive points, for high school completion rate, for low dropout rates, for entering a technical school or a vocational school or college at a high rate. I would add that I'm very pleased to see that not only are we emphasizing these other areas beyond just a four-year college, but we're also embracing students who want to do a gap year. And so we get a lot of points from the state for Kathy Klug's excellent college program. Otherwise, we could have even lower ratings. And it's not just the test scores. We looked at the root causes, which the state requires the DAC to do. And we found that in our monitoring reports that the superintendent presents to the board each year, and they either approve it or make suggestions, our goals in the monitoring reports are below what the state recommends. The state recommends that 85% of students meet or exceed a year's growth, and that's based on testing from one year to the next. Our goals were set at 80% of our students meeting or exceeding, but also they included approaching a year's growth. And one of our recommendations, strong recommendation, was to have more aspirational goals, make them at least what the state recommends. And we looked at some other root causes. The state was issuing an annual teacher climate and culture survey for years. The last one was 2015, and we found 15 areas where the teachers were saying they were quite unhappy, not feeling safe to speak out on issues they were that concerned them, and many other areas of unhappiness, such as professional development not being adequate, not enough time, not enough feedback. And so that was an area that we highlighted in our recommendations to the board. We thought that was critical because we know from research, and all educators have pretty much accepted, that the number one key to students learning is teacher effectiveness. You need teachers who are working hard, being supported, paid sufficiently. That was another item that we highlighted. Our teachers in the last 7 years have had only a 1.5% pay increase, whereas, and in fact, we have dropped from the top salary district to the fifth, despite still being the first in cost of living. So, and the other four districts, those teachers have had pay raises of up to 20%. So we know that we have a high teacher turnover, and we needed to address that. And in part, enhancing professional development here and restructuring the teacher pay scale, which the board has just started to address, but it's a bit late, but we're happy that they are addressing this. As far as professional development is concerned, the National Association of School Boards recommends that $4,000 or more be spent per teacher per year on professional development. We asked, that was one of the numbers that we were unable to find on the CDE, Colorado Department of Education. So we asked our administration for numbers explaining how much each teacher we spend on each teacher for professional development, and it was $699. And so we vastly underspend on teacher support, teacher development, and we know that that's critical to improved teaching and student learning. So the good news is that we are able to identify the root causes of our underperformance over the last 7 years. It would not be difficult to make changes in these areas, in our monitoring reports, in our teacher support, in our pace scale. It would not be difficult at all to make these changes once we make them a priority. I know that the district has said that math has been identified as a priority to turn around. But it's not just math. It's English. It's writing. We've declined pretty much across the board. And so there's lots of room. There's lots of room for improvement across the board, not just math. Math should not take as long as it's taking. It's been identified for many years as a weakness in our district. And there are more efficient ways of turning it around, including teacher support, of course. But it should not be a multi-year process the way it seems to be taking. We take no joy in identifying these downward trends. But fortunately, we can identify their causes and how to turn them around. So I think it's actually good news what we've discovered in the light of tragic results.
Can you talk a little bit more about what's being measured on some of these standardized tests for people who don't think that is a good way to analyze students, the difference between growth and achievement, and your response to if we should even be looking at these marks?
Our district is not penalized in any way if parents and students decide to opt out of testing. There's no penalty for that, as long as they sign what's called an opt-out form. This year, unfortunately, there was miscommunication or just insufficient communication, and many, many parents were not aware that they should have filled out an opt-out form. So our rating did decline overall as a district from accreditation with distinction to just accreditation. However, that's a minor glitch that in a year, I'm sure, once that is communicated, that glitch will go away. I don't have a strong opinion about whether we should all take tests or not take tests. I think that it's one way of measuring how we're doing. All the other districts do it. It's comparing apples to apples, even though the type of test has changed over the years. There's been PARC and TCAP, and there's been ACT and now SAT. They keep changing, but the whole state changes. So we're all changing together. It's a very valid comparison to compare our results to any other district in the state. We've all changed together. So I don't have a strong feeling. I think that it's nice to be able to see if our students are making a year's growth. There are other ways of assessing our students. We discovered in our review this past year and a half as a district accountability committee, we discovered that our teachers are not happy with what's called the formative assessments. And formative is done by the teacher within the classroom, and it can be done using best practices in teaching, or it can be done using standardized scores and grades. And our teachers in a recent survey felt, and in the TEL survey that the state issued, they felt that there was too much emphasis on scores and grades, and we would encourage them in our recommendations. We made a recommendation that they be allowed to use best practices. They can use whatever techniques they feel is sufficient to identify whether students are making growth. So we don't feel so strongly that it has to be all measured by what's called summative assessments, which is the standardized state tests. There's also interim assessments, which are valid as well, which is somewhere in between the formative assessments and the summative assessments.
So you were part of discovering some of these concerns, and then you took the next level of saying, you know what, I'm going to try and work to fix this. What can you bring to the board to turn around some of these things?
So after 17 years of serving on a number of school committees, just because I care about our kids' education, I have as a medical doctor, I have a lot of feedback from my kids who are long gone, but my kids' friends, classmates, and parents. And I over the years, I've had lots and lots of feedback about some struggling in college, not just in math, but the other subjects that are impacted by not being prepared in math, such as chemistry or or, you know, if you're becoming an architect, if you're becoming a marine biologist, a scientist, an engineer, all those careers can be impacted if you're underprepared in math. So I heard these concerns loud and clear over the years. I've served on all these committees trying to affect change and trying to bring to the attention of the district that we could do better and our children deserve better. And I wasn't getting anywhere, quite frankly. The DAC wasn't getting anywhere. We made all these data-based recommendations, and the board was not happy with our recommendations. And I wasn't sure if that was a case of shooting the messenger because they didn't like the information, or what exactly their unhappiness was based on. But and I think they've spoken publicly that they were unhappy with our recommendations as well. We were very careful to just keep it very objective, no emotions, nothing subjective. It was just based on the data that we were able to mine. So we're not sure what their unhappiness was based on, except that we could see that these changes are not going to be embraced overnight. And we feel that they should be. And we feel that the only way to affect the change that we feel is critical is to get on the board.
The public gets to vote on who serves on the board, many of whom don't have children in school, are new to the community, are not aware of what's going on over in our public education sector. Do you believe that what's happening in the public schools does affect the community? And regardless if you're directly attached or not, you should be involved in this race.
We're realistic. We know that maybe 2,000 people will vote out of, you know, a much larger community. We know this is not a presidential election year. So we know that many people will choose not to vote. The ones that we expect will be voting are parents of kids in the school district, grandparents of kids either in the school district or who have supported the district all these years and are now learning that we've been in a 7-year decline. I don't have any intentions of trying to get turnout to be high. I always love that. I would love that every election for every issue. I'm a strong believer in a democratic system. But I certainly would hope that people who are now finally aware of the critical underperformance going on and the disproportionate spending, we would say, in areas that are less important to student learning. I would encourage everybody who cares to vote.
And you stay involved even though you no longer have kids in the system.
So my children graduated in 2010 and 2012, and they keep asking me, couldn't you take on some other hobby like travel or read? Because they see that I just stay extensively involved in the district, and I just really do care that our kids meet their needs and they either meet or exceed expectations. And I don't want our kids to be struggling once they leave Aspen High School. I want them to do the best they can do to succeed in whatever area they choose to succeed in.
So for parents who are listening to this, I'm sure there's concern with this finding that test scores are slipping. Can you get a little more specific as to where we fall on these statewide tests?
Sure. So fortunately, the Aspen Community School is doing brilliantly with tremendous improvements. And so at our elementary school level, according to the state, we have dropped from exceeds a year's growth in all areas from 2010 just to meets all year's growth in 2017 at the elementary school, at the elementary school level, even though at the elementary school itself, in math at the elementary school, we were approaching a year's growth, 47th percentile. Anything less than 50th percentile is less than a year's growth. Our minorities were doing particularly poorly compared to the state minorities. That includes the subgroups of English learners, free and reduced price lunch eligible, minority students, and students with disability. They, some of their categories do not even meet a year's growth, which is less than approaching state's growth based on the state terminology. So overall, because of the low scores in math and English, as of 2016, without the community schools participation, the elementary school by itself was just approaching a year's growth, which is actually less than average in the state. As far as the middle school, we were approaching a year's growth in English, 49th percentile, very low in our minorities or subgroups, again, compared to state minority and subgroups, not compared just to our own students or non-subgroups. We were 32 percentile for minorities in 2016 as far as making a year's growth. So that was called does not meet, which is lower than approaching. I don't want to make this too complicated, but I do want to point out that all of our ratings between 2010 and 2017 dropped a level. At the elementary school level, we went from exceeds expectations to meets a year's growth. At the middle school, we went from exceeds a year's growth or expectations to meets in all areas except math last year. At the high school level, we dropped from exceeds in 2010 to meets in reading, mathematics, and writing at the high school. As I said earlier, the college program does raise our rating. And so overall, the high school ended up with a good rating, but the actual curricular achievement has dropped by a significant amount. At the elementary school, we dropped from 91 percentile in English and writing to 62 percentile in 2017. In math, we dropped from 2010 in math at the elementary school from 94 percentile to 64 percentile. And this is compared to districts across the state. In overall scoring for our middle school, we dropped from a percentile rank of 90th percentile in 2010 to 78th percentile in 2017. Our minorities, or the subgroups, they have percentiles like 19th percentile, 23rd percentile, 44th percentile, 39th in many of these areas. They're doing very poorly compared to the state average. And then finally, at the high school level, our percentile ranking overall dropped from 91st percentile in 2010 to 84th percentile in 2017. And that's with averaging the reading and writing scores. So if anybody is a data nerd and wants to go on the CDE website, we averaged that just to make it simpler, the reading and writing.
These percentile rankings, it's the state handing down these marks of where all schools fall within the state.
Right. So if you have 35 percentile ranking, that means 65% of districts are doing better than you are.
The board saw these numbers and was able to explain them. What was the reaction to the DAC report from this current board?
Even though this was all data-based and public information, they seem to not want to acknowledge it. They had a lot of several pages of criticism of our methods, and then when we reread their criticism and reviewed our recommendations to see if there was anything we felt we could change, there really wasn't. So I'm not sure what's motivating them not to acknowledge these numbers or act on these numbers. My understanding is that they have highlighted math, as I mentioned, but there's so much more than math. And they have embraced redoing the teacher salary, but there's so much more than just salary. There's professional development, there's redoing the monitoring reports, raising our goals to be more aspirational, addressing teacher unhappiness and their sense that they're unsafe to speak out about issues that concern them. We need to continue to align our curriculum, not only from kindergarten through 12th grade, and make vertical articulation between each of the three of the schools, so there are no gaps going from one school to the next, but also align our curriculum better with the Common Core, which is what the state has adopted. By no means involving teaching to the test, but allowing our teachers to use best practices to teach, but with the necessary support. We think that we need much better functioning school accountability committees, not just a district accountability committee, but the school accountability, SACs, are also required by the state and have not been functioning. They're supposed to be run according to the DAC handbook and SAC guidelines. They're supposed to be run by a parent. They should be a combination of parents, teachers, community members, and an administrator. And they have not been functioning. And at that level, we are optimistic that there could be constructive dialogue and raising the goals and specifying what kind of teacher professional development would enhance student learning.
Do you see some areas on the school board where if you were to come in and be part of that, you would change things?
Yes. I went to a seminar in Denver on effective school boards, and I've studied the National Association of School Boards literature extensively. And what I've learned is that for effective schools, they need to have a board with that spends more time on instructional practices than on operational management. For example, there should be quarterly monitoring of the monitoring reports to see if regularly changes are turning into improved learning. That should be happening all year long. The guidelines are to have school boards who are data savvy and embrace and monitor the data even when the information is negative and use it to drive continuous improvement. Effective school boards align and sustain resources such as professional development to meet district goals. They have consistent high expectations for student achievement, and they define clear goals, and they make sure that these goals are high and teach all children at a high level so that they can each make a year's growth regardless of where they start.
Incumbents have a history of winning in our local school board races. Do you feel like you're up against a wall?
I do. I think that I would be thrilled if I win. If I don't win, I won't be shocked or devastated. I have agreed. The DAC asked if I would stay involved in the DAC if I don't win, and I have agreed that I would. I think I'll feel a little ineffectual because I didn't feel that the board embraced our recommendations. I'm not optimistic they're going to follow through with the recommendations. They seemed kind of to be shooting the messenger and not embracing the message. So if the board doesn't change substantially in their philosophy and in their approach to student learning, I'll be very disappointed for the sake of the children. I think our kids should do better. I can only do so much. I've been involved for practically two decades, and this is my last stance as far as running for the school board, the highest level that I could contribute to.
Susan Zimmet is running for the Aspen Board of Education. Susan, thank you so much for spending time with me this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you.